So the sun sign is your essence. It's how you shine in the world, mm-hmm. right? So if you're not shining through that lens, then there's a dysfunction. Something is off. That being said, there are 10 celestial bodies mm-hmm. in a chart. Mm-hmm. And how they interact with one another has a huge impact.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave us a review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifester that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. Welcome back to the Expanded Podcast. So I'm going to kick it off, as I do always, with my magnetic story, but I do have to give you a little bit of an apology beforehand. We are all here up at the retreat house, and so we have our beautiful, wonderful Ayurvedic chef who's preparing our meals, and the team out there, and everyone's talking and listening to Theta Wave. So if you hear noise, you're just a part of the retreat with us that we are scoping out to create for you. So let's pop into the My Magnetic Story. Great news. I manifested the perfect new job. I wrote in this Facebook group a couple of months back when I was in the magic dark. I was panicking because I wanted to leave my job and nothing was happening. I had turned down two job opportunities, but they each lacked a huge component such as a compensation and an easy commute. I was in my worth and turned them down, even though I questioned my decision. I received great support in this group to help me through. You all encouraged me that I did the right thing and that my manifestation was closer than ever. I received the encouragement and immediately surrendered to the universe. I knew the perfect job was on its way. I kept applying and I kept being selective. Suddenly, the perfect job came and it came with incredible ease. I connected so easily to the team and was hired. I just finished an awesome first week and I couldn't be happier. I went back and I looked at the list I wrote back in October and received every single thing on my list. I even got a salary higher than the one I had written down. I feel so grateful that I've manifested this job for myself. I truly believe in the power of manifestation and how important it is to stay in your worth. You do deserve what you want and it is possible, even though it might not seem like it. Don't settle and let the universe do its thing. So one trigger I see coming up in the Facebook group a lot is the feeling that wanting money makes somebody feel greedy and less socially impactful. Here's the deal. We really are conditioned to think this for a couple of reasons. And I do have to say that I think spirituality and religions played a very vast role in that, especially more formative religions like, you know, something that encompasses the Ten Commandments. Also, when we're dealing with Buddhist philosophies of detachment, there's a really great episode I did on Luke Story's podcast, The Lifestylist, and we just talked about money and we really covered this in depth. But here's the deal. How can you be highly socially impactful, like making a huge, huge, huge difference if you A, don't have the freedom to do it through contribution, which also gains you power to really make the societal impact that you want to make, and B, if you're not able to totally support yourself and take care of yourself. The one thing I want to say is that as physical beings on the physical plane, we are entitled to anything we materially or physically need. If we received imprintation that told us otherwise in childhood, which if we are feeling like we have monetary constraint, that's what's happening. We just didn't see an expansion around us in what we want to do that's socially impactful, or whatever our gift is, whatever our art is, whatever our corporate track is. That's the biggest component that's missing. And then the second is that we haven't unblocked any of this programming, that we're greedy if we want money. Money is bad. Money ruins the planet. Guess what? if you're already asking this, you're a socially conscious person who's not going to use money poorly to ruin the planet. There are actually a lot of corporations that are incredibly impactful and are helping the planet. And, you know, something that I like to always remind people and expand people is we have created a company that's completely still zero waste, completely. And it's a corporation. And we're entirely zero waste. We build up every single person who engages in our brand. We tell anybody they're capable of manifesting. And now we offer it at a price that's incredibly accessible to anybody, even way more than it was prior. So it's absolutely possible to do this in the world if you desire more freedom and you desire to have more prosperity. It is your right. It's your divine right. And this is what I loved about Yogi Bhajan. He actually shifted this for me. If this is you, let it go. Take a deep breath. You deserve it. Do something great with it on the planet and go do unblocked opulence inside the pathway to make it start happening. It's actually really simple, the energetics around money, when we really get it. And there's a few components that really matter. Expanding, getting rid of all of this lack mentality that we grew up with, whether it was subtle, societal, modeled to us, it's got to go. And then also opening up portals and following our passions. And then there's a whole bunch of other little things you're going to discover in there that needs your attention. So let it go. Let it go. You deserve anything you need and be socially conscious with it once you have it. You will have it if you want it. I was a waitress 5 years ago. Like, you can have anything you want. Anybody on the planet can. So let's pop into today's episode. Today's guest, Danielle Beinstein, I think needs very little introduction. She's our team's psychological astrologer, meaning that she created her own minor at NYU, and then she went on to get her master's in spiritual psychology. If you don't check out her Instagram for all of the astral cosmic shifts that are happening from new moons to full moons to transits to, you know, retrogrades, you need to go check that out now. And this is an episode we released really early on and supported. So when you join the pathway, I have a class that I teach twice a month. I answer everybody's questions. And when we have a healer that we work with frequently, we bring them in to teach us how to manifest with their system that they use or their tools or their gift. And this was one of those episodes. So enjoy this. It's chock full of incredible information about astrology and manifestation, and head into the pathway to follow along with the rest of Supported.
We have Danielle Beinstein, but I call her Danny Beinstein here, who's a psychological astrologer. She's my personal astrologer and who I process all of my own work with. So whenever people are inquiring for sessions, because I'm not really doing them much anymore, I'm always like, go to Danny. She's the best. You know, it's who I call whenever I have anything come up, I'm triggered. And she's incredible because we really speak the same language. We believe in all of the same things and we process in very similar ways. She just has the extra bonus added of understanding astrology and what to do about it in terms of astrologically what's going on for you, what's been going on for you, and what's to come for you. So let's get right into it.
Thank you for having me, by the way.
Oh, yes. I'm so happy to have you here. This is exciting. It's been one of the ones I'm really looking forward to, especially because I'm only really familiar with my own inventory I've taken from sun signs and kind of how I see them within my practice, but you're the full shebang. And one thing that Danny always says to me, because I have all of these theories about different sun signs and manifestation, she's like, there's a whole chart. It means so little. So let's,
but like anywhere we are, just side note, it's so funny if we're like at a restaurant, you always ask the waitress, the waiter, what their sign is, which I love.
Totally. And I can always be like, I can guess too, usually.
Yeah, you're good.
With, you know, just sun though, nothing else. Except sometimes with men, I'll be like, oh, he has like a Sag moon or something. I'm getting better at moons, guessing moons to go with the sun sign.
I love it. It's amazing.
All right. So question number one. Mm-hmm. I'd love to know more about the importance of my sun sign. I depend on it for so long. I've depended on it for so long because of all the astrological information out there. But after digging deeper into the topic, sometimes I feel like my sun sign isn't as important as I thought. What are your thoughts on that? So the sun sign is your essence. It's how you shine in the world, right? So if you're not shining through that lens, then there's a dysfunction. Something is off. That being said, there are 10 celestial bodies mm-hmm. in a chart. Mm-hmm. And how they interact with one another has a huge impact.
It's kind of like Kundalini. That's wild.
Yeah, there's so many layers. And so, for example, my sun sign is sandwiched between Jupiter and Saturn. Mm-hmm. Literally, they're all within like 4 degrees. So I'm a Virgo, but Saturn and Jupiter together are kind of it's both the teacher, mm-hmm. the disciplinarian, but also the expander. Mm. So taken together, Virgo with Virgo, which is very usually humble and quiet and doesn't want to speak. I obviously like to speak and I'm louder than a lot of natal Virgos might be without that sort of scaffolding. Mm. So you have to take into account what else is surrounding the sun, what's aspecting the sun. It's not just the sun itself. So basically, my Virgo sun has both a twinge of a Sagittarian flavor and a Capricorn flavor.
Before we get really going, now I'm like, we want people to pull out their charts. What is your favorite place for like layman's regular person to go pull up their chart right now?
Just astro.com.
Astro.com. Yeah. I always do like Cafe Astrologies, but Astro.
I like Cafe Astrology too. I think astro.com also has amazing articles on it as well. But yeah, you can do it on Cafe Astrology too.
Okay. So somebody just pulled up their chart. Let's say you've just gone into what the sun sign determines a little bit, the essence. It's how you shine in the world. Let's give them the other top two that everyone's like, what's your, in LA, it's like your business card. What's your sun?
It is rising? So true.
It's so true. It's like
that cliche totally. Could not be more true.
Yeah. What would you say the moon represents and then your rising represents?
So the moon is the emotional landscape. It really can't be negotiated with, right? It's your needs, not your wants, but your needs. And then your rising sign is how you present yourself to the world. Mm-hmm. So essentially your conditioned mask.
Amazing.
Right. So the personality that we develop as a result of our childhood.
It could be your ego shell, like I call it, a manifestation.
Beautiful. I love that terminology. That's exactly what it is.
And with you, because that's such a big part of this process, is like you need to break that shell down. This is a two-part question. Right. If somebody was focusing on how to be more magnetic based on just those top three,
right,
and they were wanting to break something down and lead more from their authenticness, would it be leaning more into their moon? Or I know that still just scratches the surface.
You know, I mean, I guess I'm sure we're going to get into this in later questions, but really the planet that you're dealing with manifesting is Venus.
That's what I was thinking.
Because Venus is how we attract. Mm-hmm. But that being said, the moon is where we store our trauma.
So that's where you can kind of dig out the work. Because like, for instance, being a Capricorn moon growing up, as you know very well. And I mean, I feel like so much trauma being that in general in society, because we're so ahead and bossy and too adult for our own age, and everyone's just kind of annoyed with us when we're little. Let's say somebody's I just remember my family being really annoyed with all of those characteristics. If someone's unpacking that through the work and also the course that you'll be putting out very soon, which deals with the chakra system, it deals with really, really going into the unconscious and bringing it conscious.
Yes.
What are some ways they can look at their chart a little bit with those top or whatever other planets and houses you suggest, because they're looking at their planets and houses right now on their chart,
right,
where they can kind of look to see where maybe some of the work will live through those signs and characteristics?
It's the fourth house. Mm-hmm. So the fourth house is our roots, our ancestry, our home, our psychological conditioning. It's associated with the moon. Mm-hmm. Each house in the chart is associated with a sign.
Yeah.
So it's associated with Cancer. Which
is our
moon rolls tricky.
Okay.
I just imagine like your disciples who just love you so much for Cancer, and she's like, and they're just thinking, oh my God, would she not?
No, I love Cancers. I love them. Double Cancers are tricky, but I love them.
No, I think it's I'm a Cancer rising. So I understand. It's like, there's a lot of emotionality. Mm-hmm. And anytime you have a lot of emotionality, and a lot of complex emotions that are clouding the clarity of manifestation, there's some unpacking that needs to be done, which is why I think you always say that Aries is the fastest manifestor, because it's the first sign, it's the first out of the gate. It's uncomplicated. Mm-hmm. It's very pure.
It's uninhibited.
It's uninhibited. It goes directly for what it wants. Mm-hmm. It's not afraid to move outside of its comfort zone. Mm-hmm. It's also, you know, it has a bad rap for being selfish. Mm-hmm. But in a culture where we teach women not to have boundaries, mm-hmm. Aries...
Or boundaries are bad.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Aries women tend to be stronger mm-hmm. in their use of boundaries.
Absolutely.
So in saying no...
It's like they don't even understand that they're talking to it. That's why they seem selfish. But they're just like, yep, onto what I want. Here's what I'm doing.
This is what I want. I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm going after it. It's a direct route.
Mm. So somebody's looking at that fourth house and they're pulling up their sign, even though the house is like attached to the moon in Cancer, but yours is your sign. Let's say they're kind of reading on astro.com a little bit more about that fourth house and learning about whatever their sign is in that fourth house. What is the gleaning information they can take from, because everyone's is different. I mean, some are overlapping, but like the gleaning information they can take from that particular planet in that house, that sign in that house.
Right, that cusp. It's really the psychological conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So,
for example,
how they were mothered mm-hmm. or parented by the parent that has the subtler psychological mm-hmm. effect, whereas the 10th house, which is opposite, is more the external,
mm-hmm.
which traditionally is the paternal.
Yeah.
Right. So you look at that and then you look at how that's affected you mm-hmm. over time. For example, if someone has... Because Saturn's in Capricorn mm-hmm. right now, and a lot of your readers and followers are going through their Saturn return, mm-hmm, right?
Totally.
So if you have, let's say, Capricorn in the fourth,
mm-hmm.
then it's very likely that you felt unnurtured mm-hmm. growing up. So you felt undervalued
mm-hmm.
and you felt that your needs didn't matter
mm-hmm.
or that you had to buck up or that you had to work very hard or earn mm-hmm. certain things, mm-hmm. You're going to have to break that down.
Okay, great. That your true authenticity isn't reflected in that at all.
Right. Whereas if you had Pisces on that mm-hmm. cusp, which is nowhere and everywhere, you may have a harder time pinpointing what it is that you want mm-hmm. and actually feeling worthy of it because you had a caregiver or parent who was not really there
mm-hmm.
or an addict of mm-hmm. some kind.
Totally. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So you may seek what I call carrot danglers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
As opposed to something that is very concrete.
And ready and available for
yes.
you.
Yes. Yes. Instead of I'm dreaming this up or if I just do this, then.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly. I love that. And of course, if this all sounds like mumbo jumbo, like hop on the line and do a session because, you know, you'll be able to lay it out.
Yes, it's hard. It's hard to sort of appeal to everybody when talking about something like this because it's so complicated
and
there's so much cookie cutter BS out there, which I understand for monetary reasons or to monetize it. People do put out horoscopes or things like this.
Yeah.
And I understand that. But a lot of times it confuses people more because
Absolutely.
Charts are so specific, just like human beings are so specific.
I agree entirely. So for the person who feels a little bit more advanced in astrology, you're always monitoring if you check out your fourth house and you're kind of familiar with what that sign is in the fourth house. It's basically this, like looking at who nurtured you from more of the maternal standpoint.
Right.
And then associating with the sign or looking at the dichotomy between the two of what might be missing psychologically and what you didn't receive and really needed.
Right.
That's where you'll be doing the digging to get truer into your authentic self. It sounds like to me.
That's exactly it. And so beautifully articulated. It's that you're going to seek whatever it is that you're trying to manifest from the lens.
Yes.
Yes. Of that conditioning.
I see. And what you really need to do is decondition that.
Yes.
So you can use your Aries.
So you can use your Aries.
You can use your Venus.
But you should use your Aries because everyone has Aries in their chart.
Everyone. Yes. I have way too much, I feel.
But it's funny. Like everything else has been harder for me to manifest, but I have Aries in my 10th, which is the house of career. And I was raised by an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So once I made the decision, I did manifest that sooner.
Yep.
So totally. Looking for where you have Aries in your chart may also be beneficial as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. I really believe that completely.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. And we'll get into Venus a little bit later, even though we're looking at Venus as planet, because I think somebody asks that question and we can really unpack Venus like in a whole because that's really something that anyone can check out in their chart and get 100%. Familiar with your attraction style. Yes. Unless you're Aries Venus like me. Just do what you want.
I'm kidding.
Okay. No, we actually had someone. I had to change the question to make it a little bit more streamlined. But they're like, "Is Venus in Aries a bad thing?" And I'm like, "No, no, it's not. It makes it one step a little bit easier, but not really, depending on how you were conditioned growing up too. Because I had a lot of work I had to do around all sorts of stuff with that.
You had to liberate it.
Yes, exactly. Liberate it. Yes, exactly. Unbound it. Exactly. Which planets and houses in the birth chart are important in looking at how a person manifests? So I guess we can kind of get into Venus a little bit more. And Mars, another one.
Yes. Yeah. So the second house, so there are 12 houses, just like there are 12 signs.
So when you're looking at your chart on astro.com, you'll see your 12 planets here and your house is right here, the 12 next to it. So that's what we're talking about right here, the second one. And your rising sign is technically your first house, right?
It's so your first house cusp, yes.
Yeah, when people are like, what's your sun is here, your moon is right below it in the planets, and then over here, the first house is your rising.
Yes.
Great. And so now we're talking about the second house.
Right. So the second house, so the first house is here I am, it's personal
identity.
Meanwhile,
like everybody has their charts in the room. I love that always, it's great. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's amazing. So the first house is, if you think of a baby being born, it's like, this is my personal identity, this is my essence, this is how I present to the world.
Ooh, that's right. Your authentic self in a way.
In a way it is. Okay. Yes, right? This is how I present, right? This is my physical presentation.
Like I'm a Leo and I have big eyebrows. I want to be seen.
Yes.
It's all of these things.
Yeah.
Every Leo I know has big eyebrows, but I'm a Leo rising.
I think the hair.
The hair, right. Like the physical, like you're saying, it's your physical presentation. What's yours?
I'm Cancer.
Yeah.
So I, you know.
She's crap. No, I'm kidding.
Yes. No, I am. I totally am. And I had to come out of my shell. And I had to, you know, because I'm also, I can be maternal when I meet people or I can be very reserved.
Yeah.
I can crawl into my shell. So yes. So that's how I present. And that was conditioned by my upbringing where I felt that I had to mother.
Totally.
Because I was unmothered.
1,000%.
My mom will never see this, so it's all good.
No, you're totally fine here. Yeah. So,
she can't even work a cell phone, so we're good.
Yeah. So. Totally. Yeah, you're fine. I don't think she'd care anyways, to even look it up. Like if it were out. Not a problem.
Just my trauma. So the second house is a baby's born, right? And then it's like, what's the next developmental stage? Mine.
Mine,
right?
Trying to have a sense of control because everything's out of control.
Right. So these are my physical possessions. This is what I own. As we grow up, the second house is how we draw our self-esteem or what we draw our self-esteem from. Mm. What are our values, right? How we use our personal talents and gifts for income or can. It's income based on work.
Ooh.
So not income based on like commission or using other people's resources. Let's say if you bought a house with a loan and then sold a house and you netted whatever the profit is, that would be eighth house, opposite the second house.
Ooh.
So the second house, eighth house access is really, it's the money access.
Ooh. So this is like if you're really looking at manifesting career-wise, especially.
Yes. Okay. So like opulence.
Oh, okay. Cool, cool, cool.
Right? So the second house is going to tell us what our unique talents are.
And kind of it can give you clues of your purpose a little bit.
Yes.
Okay.
Example. So for example, I just think it's easier to use personal.
Something,
right?
Yeah.
So I'm Cancer rising, right? But my second house cusp is in Leo.
Mm.
And so as much as I want to hide being a Virgo too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And a Capricorn moon. Mm. I've got my Venus in Leo in the second house.
Yeah, wow.
So that's been part of my growth to say, oh, actually, I don't mind the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if I allow myself to receive attention and I allow myself to be a little bit more shiny, I attract like that.
Totally.
But I had to unpack the Capricorn moon.
Totally.
To go after the V. And I've had a lot of, so this is interesting. I have a Capricorn moon, which can feel highly unworthy.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Totally.
But my Venus in Leo was like, oh no, I want that.
Yeah. And I need it.
And I need it, right? But my moon is like, you do not need it.
Mm-hmm.
You do not need to work.
Right. Conflict.
So I had to unpack
the conditioning of my moon in order to liberate my Venus to say, I want that.
I love that. And so somebody, if they have the polar opposite in their second house in Venus, let's say it's a Capricorn, let's say, where it does want to, or let's even say like more Cancer-y, like wants to hide a little bit and protect itself. How can they be more in their authenticity and deconditioned to really attract from, because that's also a very magnetic state if it's not a false state, if it's a own state.
So Cancer's security minded. Yeah. It's also anything nurturing or associated with the breasts.
Yeah.
So if they were to do.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Like that.
Right. But it's lunar, right? So if they had any kind of career where it was about security, the home, real estate, that also falls under Cancer, anything dealing with mothering or nurturing, they're going to manifest in that way.
Beautiful. So really being okay, unpacking maybe any of the shinier signs you have that it could be like more Leo and Aries.
Beautiful.
And really being okay with being in that maternal inward and nurturing space, whatever capacity that comes out of your life.
Okay. Whereas if you have Aries, you're going to manifest, well, you're just going to manifest, but you're going to manifest by being a pioneer.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So for just going after something.
Also,
anything that has a competitive side, that you're comfortable in that competitive side.
Great. And like, let's say someone like a Taurean we haven't brought up.
Yes.
Like in that, because that just gives like the earth roundabout. What would that look like in the second house?
Well, they're actually going to manifest, but it's going to come because they're so security minded and because they like money.
And they also like being unapologetic about being like loving opulence and fine things and like champagne.
Yes,
and
the hedonism.
Yes, exactly.
Not in a judgmental way,
no.
But in a, right? So they're gonna embrace their sensuality, and they may have a career that has to do with appealing to beautiful, sensual objects, for example.
I always think of Meredith, our friend Meredith Barry, who I don't know if that's in her second house, but her son is Taurean, and she's like a beautiful chef and like likes finer clothes. And really, you know, she's really classy that way.
Yes.
And it works. Obviously, she's very magnetic with it.
So. Yes. And that's her sun sign. And she, And so that's an example of an earth sign manifesting.
Amazing. So we have the second house covered in ratio to Venus. No, because Venus is fourth. Second house in ratio.
No, well, Venus is a planet. So houses and planets are different. So I happen to have Venus in my second house.
That's why you're saying it. That's what the connection
but
is.
But you can have Venus in any of the 12 houses.
Totally. Okay, that makes sense. So I thought the fourth house was associated, but I got that wrong. So scratch all that.
Yes. Cool. So Venus is actually associated with the second house.
Naturally, normally.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. So that's why you say it's also the planet and a house to look at.
Yes.
Beautiful.
But it's also associated with the seventh house.
Great. And the seventh house is also like love and
partnership,
right? Yeah.
Right. Because Venus, this is why it's so complex. Venus rules both Taurus and Libra.
Okay, cool.
So when we're talking about attracting, it's like, that's why Librans tend to attract partners unless there's other things
very
going on.
Easily. Yeah. Usually.
Right.
Unless there's, a whole bunch of stuff to have to go through.
Because Libras are partner oriented. So they need something to mirror off of.
Totally. Yeah. And they're like natural codependents.
Yes.
Stuff, like they love having. It's true. I know it.
It's their shadow.
It's
big
their
time.
Shadow.
Yeah.
Codependents. Yeah. Okay, cool. I feel like we got that one down.
Wait, did we do the eighth? But and we talked about the eighth house.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So eighth house is other people's resources. So people I find who have very strong eighth houses.
Mm-hmm.
You,
mm-hmm.
Right?
What would be an example of strong? It's an area.
A lot of energy in the eighth house.
Okay.
So where the second house is associated with Taurus, the eighth house is associated with Scorpio.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So it's where we merge resources. So people who have a lot of energy in their eighth house usually can very easily benefit from other people's resources.
Ooh, okay.
So they're more likely to receive gifts in that way.
And what would be some of the, like you're saying, a house with a lot of energy, what would be some of those signs they could be looking at that has a lot of that energy? Or what did you say? Like a strong house.
A strong eighth house. So a strong eighth house means that there's many planets in that house.
Ooh.
So you know how you'll say often, like you need to, the fastest way to manifest is not by receiving from other people.
Totally. Yeah.
if you have strong eighth house energy, you're going to naturally manifest through other people.
That's wild. Okay, yeah. I see. And can it show up in different ways? Meaning,
Well, it can show up psychologically. So you get totally. The emotional and psychological support. It can show up financially.
Yeah.
It can show up. Eighth house, like Scorpio, can manipulate energy.
Okay, great. It's like the shadow worker. Like they shine light in the darkness. They can move things around or alchemize things.
Beautiful. Yeah. That's exactly it, right? So if you have a lot of energy in your eighth house, you're going to be able to draw from other people's resources.
I love that. So it's not just financial resources. Because like in opulence, I'm like, your money needs to be to the universe, not to other things. Or it can't be other things. Those funnels are just open to them. And it's okay if they're supporting you through that. And that's what your purpose is. That's beautiful.
Beautiful. So for example, an eighth house person, their portal would be through other people.
Amazing. And like a great example of this is when Max and I got together, I just like skyrocketed because I had we'll get into that later. I think Virgos naturally help other people manifest very simply because he's a double Virgo. But because he was so supportive, I could be like, I'm going to fly to the moon and be an astronaut. Mm-hmm. He'd be like, that's amazing. I mean, it wasn't a financial support because I made a conscious decision. I didn't want that from him. But he is so supportive, nurturing, believes in anything that it was like, it just helped me so much. So I could see that having that strong house drawing on him. And I draw on so many people for resources energetically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really
cool And thing. If you think about it, Free Native is also, it's drawing from other people's gifts
totally
as well
1,000%
right and presenting them
1,000%
so there's an alchemical process in that as well.
I love that. What if you have a weaker eighth house, whatever that means?
That's fine. I have a weak eighth house.
What does that look like for you?
So it means I don't have any planets there.
Okay,
so you know it's not a place. In fact, it's where I have my south node. So it's where my soul is coming from, and my north node is in my second house. So it means in my soul. So we're going to get into the north. There's so much here.
It's great. You just have to get a session with Daniel. This is like, what? Yeah. But just to clarify.
So if you don't have anything in the eighth house, it means that you're not as likely to manifest through other people's resources.
You have to be more independently, like getting your own momentum through independence.
Yes. Okay. And this is interesting because a lot of people think, oh, if you grow up in a certain income bracket, you know, then you will automatically receive from your parents.
I've known so many famous kids from famous parents, and they're just like, nope, nothing's happening for them.
They probably don't have a lot of energy in their eighth house.
Totally makes sense.
So they have to carve their own
self, motivate. And just to glean over really quick, south, north node and south node, because I've always been curious about what those do represent.
Yeah, so north node is where our soul is going.
Wait, first on their chart, where are they seeing their north node?
It could be anywhere. It could be in any house or any sign.
If you're just pulling up your chart, I think in Cafe Astrology, it just says it. Like it's like your north node and your south node is this.
So on astro.com, all the way at the like on the left-hand side on the bottom, it will say true node.
Ah, true node is north node?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that represents your north node. And then where will it say south node?
It won't. You just know it's the opposite.
Oh, it's the opposite.
Yes.
Like direct, kind of how the new moon and full moon are complete.
Yes,
opposites.
It's the 180.
Okay, it's the 6-month difference.
Right. It won't indicate it. It'll indicate it visually, but it won't.
And for like super layman terms, if you go on Cafe Astrology, it just tells you what they are.
Or you can just look up the year, your birthday.
Oh,
you know,
and whatever it was in. Yes. Then. Okay. So telling us what North Node means and South Node generally.
So the North Node is where the soul is going. So it's going to feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to feel comfortable.
Okay.
The South Node is what's comfortable.
So North Node is like your karmic journey on the planet. Yes. Why you incarnated.
And a lot of people live their life without fully moving into their north node.
Wow, because that's where you do the work and you transform and change into your authentic self.
Yes, and about the age of 37, you get an opportunity to really live into your North Node.
So it's like a Saturn return for your North Node.
Yes.
Ooh. So for the 37-year-olds out there or the impending, what would be the keynotes you would tell them about their North
Node? Pay attention to the thing that scares you the most and then jump off the cliff.
Not too crazy for manifestation. You're going to be very magnetic if you do that. Excellent.
Pretty much.
Okay, great. I love that. And then the South Node, you say, will be easier because...
Well... it's your karmic ties. So it's the thing that feels the most comfortable.
So anything from the past that feels familiar and nice and easy and like warm.
Even if it's not really easy.
Yeah. It just feels it's
less scary.
Complacent.
Yes.
It's like a better way to put it.
Beautifully said.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Ooh, I love that. Okay. And did we cover fully the 8th house, you think, of everything?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And the 2nd. Okay.
We're like only on question 2.
I can't wait. This is great. This is a lot. Are you guys learning stuff from this? Okay, good. If you guys are learning, it means you guys are learning. So that's a good temperature for me. Okay. This, I think, is a really, really pressing question for a lot of you out there who are, what are the years for Saturn return? I know it's individual for some people, but the general.
Roughly 28 to 30.
28 to 30. So for you 28 to 30 years out there, how do they deal with their Saturn return in regards to blocks and manifestation?
Okay, so this is again really complex because where Saturn is in the chart. For example, I have a lot of clients and I am surrounded right now with people who have Saturn transiting their 4th house.
Okay.
That means...
which we covered.
Yes. Yeah. That means they have to do a lot of deep digging around their conditioning.
Yeah.
Now, if they have Saturn in their 10th house... Mm-hmm. oppositionally currently, then that means they're going to be in a place where they're going to be reaping rewards. They're going to be at a peak moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I think that's what I was. I mean, I had a little bit to do and I might be wrong. I mean, I know that you know the charts better, but I like had my earthquakes happen at 25 to like 28, where it was like, fuck.
But I think that had more to do with Pluto on your moon.
Ah, that's right. Okay, cool.
Which is like a deep cathartic transformation.
And
Saturn structural.
Forced into your authentic self.
Yeah, you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Whereas Saturn is more structural. So Saturn is like, pay your fucking taxes.
Yeah, I'll give my 2 cents on this about manifestation.
Right?
Become an adult.
Yeah. Clean up your act, right? Get out of debt. I don't mean
leave the relationships that aren't serving you. Take the job. Stop being afraid. It's time
Here's
to leave
another
that
thing
job.
During a Saturn return. This is giant. I'm going to say this. And it's going to sound judgmental, but it's actually more of a word of caution. Do not get married as a point of security.
Like ever in life.
One. Ever in life. Ever. But especially around the Saturn return.
Those are the most divorces, I think, or unhappiness.
Yes, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And so 100%. Like what Danny's saying is like, if you love your partner and you guys are autonomous beings and you're totally on your own roads, but coming together to support each other, get married, rock on. That's like probably going to be a great healthy relationship no matter what. Well, I'm still a waitress and my partner's this and he can provide this life or she can provide this life. Then I better just do it. Do not, even if it's even more subtle than that, like we've loved each other. We've been together since high school. We're both doing okay, but I know that this will bring me a lot of comfort and security and safety. Don't, it's not a time to do it. Wait until after Saturn return closes.
Right. Because we start to feel, what happens is we feel a lot of pressure.
And, to adult.
Yes, to adult. And so we get scared.
Yeah.
And that's why it has a bad rap. And that's why a lot of people see the people around them. Oh, they're getting married. Their life is perfect and mine's a mess.
Yeah.
It's that's very dangerous.
Yeah, I've known actually so many both clients and people in real life that are divorcees after because they've finally stepped into their power. And that was like, it was a total false comfort. It was a false comfort for both people. And they attracted each other from multiple learning lessons. And
100%. So there is the sort of karmic unfolding, but there is. It will come around when Saturn squares and moves in opposition.
And any other last words that you can say, like kind of definite for any sign that's in Saturn return, for any house that it falls in? These are some things to really know in terms of blocks and manifestation.
Have mastery over the fear.
Always. Like that's the whole
right. But it's like, don't let the fear dictate.
Don't let it stop you. Yeah.
And don't think that this is the destination. Mm-hmm. It's really just the beginning of the story.
Totally agree. Even though it feels like it might be the end of the world.
Because what happens is you feel that immense pressure, and then like 3 years later, you're like, I was so fucking young.
Totally.
What was I thinking?
Totally.
So
now I have a question. I have two questions about this. One, if you're also looking at your chart right now and you see those planets and those houses, Saturn, the one that says Saturn on the left side, is going to be the sign that yours is in. Yes. I don't know how it'll determine what house it's in. That's maybe it's a Danny session. But you'll kind of know, and I can't remember mine. I think it was Scorpio. I can't remember, but all I can say, and this is what leads into my question, is after Saturn return closed, it's like I'm incapable. I'm having to decondition to become a kid again, to be like free. It's like my Capricorn took over.
That's your Capricorn moon. I don't think that's going to be the case for that specific to you.
Okay.
Because that is... I have that same thing. I have a Capricorn moon.
Okay.
I think that's less about having had the Saturn return.
Cool.
What it is that you came into yourself more and more.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
And your authentic self. See, this is where I think authentic self doesn't mean to me that like you're just frolicking all the time.
No, oh my God, it's different for everyone.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of talk about the inner child.
Totally.
And so it's like, if I liberate the inner child, then I'm just going to want to skip all the time and have, you know, ice cream cones.
You might have had inner children, like you might have had to be an inner child, like a child of an alcoholic who had to be on and great.
Right.
You're actually a really like structured person who finds a lot of happiness and quietness. And
yes.
It's all totally, everyone is so authentically uniquely different.
Exactly.
It's not like we're all just wearing white dresses and
no.
like fucking
the source family.
Yeah. So we're not all source family around once we're authentic at all.
At all.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably a lot of Pisces and Neptune happening.
So that is. I'm like, hey, photographer, actor, writer, like pull it together. That's like what I always think of all my Piscean friends. They're like designers, actors, photographers. Like, pull it in. Yeah.
Go find a Virgo.
Yeah, you need your Virgo or Capricorn, either
yeah,
of them.
Totally.
Get away from your Aquarians. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
So does that answer the question?
I think so. Okay. For Saturn returners, that's what I'll speak to it like from when I'm working with clients from a manifestation standpoint. Just like Danny's saying, my biggest thing I can tell you when it comes to creating more magnetism on the other side is anything you know that's no longer serving you, but you're way too afraid. Mm-hmm. So not letting the fear rule you, you're way too afraid to let it go or walk through it or grow into something else. This has to be the time that you do it because the next years after, I just see them always being rougher and harder, more resistance coming their way than the ones who took those big leaps of faith and like jumped into what was serving them and better for them. Even if it was like, great examples for me was, it's when I finally left my waitressing and my, you know, school teaching jobs that I hated and they were ruining my body. It's probably why I have all these endocrine issues. It's when I left my relationship of 6 years where I was like, this is probably the person I'm going to marry, but, and he has like the best French mom who would make the best French grandma for my kids, but he didn't want to get married or have kids. So it was like, I had to make these really big leaps of faith, even though there was really not a lot wrong in our relationship. It's those ones, if they're even subtle, that you know around you, physical, psychological, emotional, that you know you have to rise up and like 100%. Step into what is good for you and best for you. It's the time you need to do it.
Yeah. So, it's not going to get easier.
No, it won't. That's like the big, and things will flow so much. Nothing's easy in life.
Right.
Life can flow easily, but you'll always come up against mirrored lessons, but it will flow.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode that I hope you're finding very expanding to tell you about a special offer that you won't find anywhere else but here. So with the code JOURNEY, that's capital JOURNEY, simply put that in order to receive your first month off free for the pathway or 10% off any of the a la carte. And once you're in the pathway, there's a suggestion of exactly what you should follow, starting with a formula and magnetism workshop, moving into reparent and shadow, and then you'll move through if you're calling in a career opulence, you'll move through partnership if you're calling that in, and of course, everybody should be doing the daily reprogramming exercise. The beautiful thing about the pathway as well is that you will have access to the Facebook group, which is the like-minded community you've probably been manifesting. And it gives you access to all of the Unblock villages that are meeting up around the world. So you'll be able to find one in hopefully your neighborhood. And you get full access to my class, which is twice a month called Supported, where you can write in any question you're having about your manifestation process or manifestation in order to have me answer your question. Enjoy the rest of this episode.
The other thing during a Saturn return is notice any Capricorns who come into your life, or notice any people who come into your life who have very strong Saturn, because they're probably there to teach you something. Notice what teachers say. You notice if people, you know, it's like during my Saturn return, I had a lot of much older people come into my life, right? Which I had anyway in my life.
Naturally
do. But I had to heed their lessons. I had to be humble enough to heed their lessons. So this brings in the next point that I wanted to make about Saturn return. Those going through Saturn return now, they're millennials, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
So their parents are boomers.
Yeah.
So their model for their life is very outdated.
Totally.
Because the economy that millennials have inherited post the recession of 2008 and just with the rapid change of technology and the gig economy and the share economy is it's so different from the baby boomer climb the ladder that...
Like get your pension doesn't even exist anymore.
Yes,
all of that.
It's all of that. So, and who knows what the world is going to look like in a decade, right? I mean, we're floating around universal basic income right now. So to try and please your parents is even more dangerous in our current economy and where we're going. It's not even realistic. It's not the security that your parents sought.
Like the college you think you have to go to, the yada yada you have to do, the career you're supposed to do. It is, like you're saying, it can be not detrimental, but it's...
Well, it can be because it's not taking into account context. So, you know, if you're looking to people whose careers took off in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, right? It's a very different world.
Totally.
So it's really important to take whatever your parents say with a grain of salt. So when I say Saturn figures, what I mean is more about personal responsibility. You still have to pay your taxes. You still have to get your stuff in order. But when it comes to fear-based things, like you need to stay at this job because you're going to get a pension. Really? And what if that company is bought out?
Totally.
And you're kicked out, which happens, right? Because from an evolutionary perspective, also, we are being called to self-actualize at a much faster rate.
Absolutely.
So it's really more about building your individual business, even no matter what you do, right? It's really building your unique skill sets so that you can serve in whatever way you're meant to serve or contribute in whatever way you're meant to serve. It's really important because I get a lot of, they marry for their parents or they make choices for their parents, but their parents, you know, came of age and came into adulthood.
Post-war,
yeah. Which was the biggest growth in American history.
Totally, yeah.
That's not the case anymore.
No. And it was also like the most like frolicky, like life is perfect. Everything's great. Like, religion, like all this stuff that definitely, and what I'll say on a manifestation standpoint, it couldn't be more aligned, like the further you're getting away from your authentic self to please anyone in your life, to people please, the more your life is going to be full of lessons, tests, struggles, work, all that good
100%.
Stuff. The more you can just take your power in, no matter how hard I know that can be for people who come from, you know, so much, I had alcoholic young parents, so I could always be like, fuck it, I'm going to do whatever I want.
Right.
But if you come from really like supportive, nurturing parents, it's now or never, or it'll be now or never later. But now is a great time at your Saturn return, like Danny said, to be supported after, like having that help from the universe.
Yeah, it's really important because I think I just don't think it's taken into consideration. And you just look around at our economy, look around to how things are shifting and moving, and so it's just extra important.
I agree. I think that's such great advice that anybody watching can take away. I mean, if you're in your second Saturn return, this is great.
Yeah,
that's great advice. True. When is your second Saturn return?
So it's 28 years later. So it's essentially like 56.
Great. Okay, so transit, trine, conjunct, aspects. What do these things really mean in layman's terms?
So conjunct means they're conjoined, meaning that it means they're within 10 degrees of each other.
If you're looking at your chart, what it'll say at the bottom of like, I just know Cafe Astrology. So what it'll say at the bottom of Cafe Astrology, it'll show you like these little symbols.
Yes.
Show everything.
Yes.
But it'll be like, my sun in Aquarius is conjunct whatever in Venus.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about. Those transits is what they're called,
yes.
right?
No, those aren't transits.
Ah, they're called,
those are aspects.
Aspects.
Yes.
Ah, good to know.
Yeah. So when there's a conjunction, it's within a 10 degree orb. Trines and sextiles are positive.
Ah.
Squares and oppositions. It's geometry.
Oh.
Like I was terrible at everything in math, except I was good
Same.
At geometry.
I was good at geometry.
Right? Yeah. So it's just geometry. So it means that there's either a positive flowing aspect.
Between those two.
Between whatever the planets are. Or there's a more challenging aspect, which would be square or opposition, or even possibly conjunct is considered more challenging.
And what are like, from a manifestation standpoint, the lessons and the more difficult ones? Like that they can kind of look and see if I'm so-and-so squared, if I have my sun squared my Venus, what's that?
Saturn.
Oh, Saturn.
So if Saturn squares your Venus, if Saturn is opposition, your Venus or sun, if Saturn is conjunct, you are going to feel less than, and you are going to feel like you have to have status or you have to achieve in order to be worthy.
Ooh.
So you're going to feel you need to earn love.
So the like true
or whatever it
is deconditioning in order to feel, what is that word?
Worthy.
Worthy, but also like a more magnetic, energetic beneath that is like, what is that? Entitled. That's the best way to...
but not from entitlement of...
Ego.
Of ego, inflation, but just this is my birthright.
This is my birthright is the perfect way to say it.
So it's like what the positive side is you're going to have a more realistic adult perspective on relationship once you do the clearing.
Cool. Okay. And to go even more like totally layman's terms, whatever.
Or finances. Ooh, both.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you would say for square, what would be like, if they're all looking at their chart and they're like, so-and-so squared, whatever, square just in general, what could be the lesson there that they can determine if they're just looking at their chart, right? What square could mean in terms
of... Right. So it means there's going to be a tension between those two planets, so those two forms of energy. Tension is positive in that we can, it's creative force, right? If everything's just flowing...
Yeah.
Right? It's like there's no force coming. Nothing's happening.
Yeah,
totally. So tension is how we grow.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad thing. It's just, it means that there's something to work through.
Great. Excellent. So that's what you can look at.
Yes.
Like squared, those two signs, what they mean in kind of opposition to each other. That's the tension and that you can look at could be a determining factor for some lessons like in your program, bringing some unconscious conscious of how to take what's inauthentic to authenticity through your chakra system.
Exactly. So you said opposition. So opposition is different.
Okay.
So opposition is 180 degrees. When you're dealing with oppositions, you're dealing with polarity. You're dealing with mirroring, meaning you can't hold both sides of the seesaw at the same time.
Yes. Okay.
So let's say you play into your Venus and it's opposite Saturn. You're going to draw in Saturn figures. If you play into your Saturn, you're going to draw in Venus figures.
And, okay, I love that, into your life. And then you can start to look at being like, Saturn figures might not be great for me. So I better look at, maybe that's a carrot dangler.
Exactly.
And I can start to see what's opposite of a carrot dangler is, you know, Saturn. And maybe I'll start to gravitate towards moving into more of that direction and saying yes to those people.
Right. So a carrot dangler would be more Neptune.
Okay.
Saturn would be more withholding. Disciplinarian,
unavailable,
parental in a negative way. There can be parental in a positive way. Like in my relationship, we both have Capricorn and we take turns parenting one another or reparenting one another.
Beautiful.
Right. Which is different than
like the martyr.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And then what are the other two, just so they can look at their charts, just an overview of,
So you mean like other, so Neptune?
There's square, conjunct, and
right.
then
opposition. And then there's trine and sextile.
Yes.
And those are positive, more flowing energy.
Beautiful. So you know that the support of this one planet and this mm-hmm. other one, or this one sign and this other
yes.
sign, are going to flow better and help you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And the trine, they're going to be in this same element.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be earth to earth, fire to fire. Whereas sextile, it's going to be, let's say, earth to water
mm-hmm.
or fire to air.
So if you're looking at your chart right now from a manifestation right. standpoint, or the program that you have, what you could do is start to just like dig in and look at
yes.
those different oppositions, square and conjuncts, and
yes.
start to be like, maybe I can just look at this and take it through your program,
yes.
do a little digging. Or if you're doing reparenting.
100%.
Or opulence. Or opulence.
Or shadow.
Shadows, great for that. Where you're like, if I don't know what I'm supposed to work on right now
right.
at all in my life, maybe I'll take my first square and I'll just like look at
yes.
what those mean, and then I'll deduce what that means
yes.
at the bottom and from what you just taught us, and then I'll go and take that through repairing.
Right. If you're seeing a lot of oppositions or a lot of energy in the seventh house, I recommend shadow.
Okay, great. Okay. And a lot of energy in the seventh house, again, means you have a lot of planets in it.
Yes.
Great. I love that. I'm learning a lot today. This is great. This is way better than any of the fucking books I've read. I'm learning way more right now. You need a YouTube series of just being like, conjunct means. That would be so helpful.
I should
people.
Do that.
You should.
Okay. All that's coming.
Especially because it's from a psychological, like grounded standpoint.
Yeah.
So where you're like, conjunct means this. So in the unconscious, it would mean that. This
yes.
is what you can work through
yes.
through the programs. It could help so many people.
Done. Brainstorming.
I'm going to produce this. Like, or Amanda's going to produce this.
Come in.
And then this
because
I
have a moon in the seventh house, so I need partners in order to move.
Yeah, happen. Did I? They're incredible. I love them so much, and I would basically not function at all if I didn't have these awesome people in my life.
So
I love them so much.
So important.
Okay, so how can you thrive when having opposing elements in your chart, like fire and water, or earth and, like, so let's say earth and water or whatever. If you have opposing elements in your chart, can you thrive?
So opposing, fire and water go together.
That's what I mean.
Fire and air go together.
Yeah.
Water and earth go together.
Yeah.
So they're not, those aren't opposing. What gets a little tricky is if you have fire and water,
like
or air and water,
fire out. Just simple elements,
right? So it's just feeding. It's knowing who's driving the bus.
Yeah.
So it's just feeding whichever or bringing forward whichever part of you is appropriate in that circumstance.
Mm, okay. So what would be some examples in their chart and also with the elements?
Okay. So an example is, let's say someone has
Cancer and Aries.
Okay. So if they, right. So let's say they have, let's do it this way. Let's say they have an Aries sun and a Cancer moon.
Do you think, not to sidetrack, mm-hmm. we should explain for like the super layman person, which signs are what elements really quick, just
okay.
so they understand.
So Aries is fire. Taurus is earth. Gemini, I'm just going to go in order.
Oh, great. Yeah,
Gemini's
that's
air.
The way that she's saying it, which is actually really something to learn that's really fun, is all the planets, they actually move in a cycle. So it's like the first sign, second sign, third sign,
right.
All the way down to the 12th sign. That's what order that you're going in. So it's like the newbie, the newborn
right.
of the astrological
yes.
makeup is Aries, and the very last would be Pisces. So she's going to walk through each of these
yes.
right now and what their elements are.
Exactly. So Aries is fire. Taurus is earth. Gemini is air, Cancer is water, Leo is fire, Virgo is earth, Libra is air, Scorpio is water, Sagittarius is fire, Capricorn is earth, Aquarius is air, and then Pisces is water.
So now you know the elements, and that's
yes.
what this particular person's asking is, what if something's opposing? So what Danny said at first was, air and fire go really well together, super compatible. Like the air feeds the fire, you know, it's just like simple elements where water and earth, they're more in the feminine together. They go really well together. One's earthy and then the water is usually around it. Like it feeds the stuff.
It can soften the stone.
Soften the stone. Exactly. So now what this particular, you know, person's asking is, what if you have super opposing? And I think always of like, even though I know a lot of very compatible Aries and Cancer, like the most, like more sensitive feminine sign to like the most patriarchal feeling, like hardest fire sign. So Aries fire to like the softer Cancer. That would be
what was interesting about that. So there's elements and then there's qualities, and both of those are cardinal.
And so, yeah, let's explain that really quick, because I always find this so fascinating with the season.
So, So cardinal signs start the seasons, and then fixed are in the middle of the season, and then mutable kind of transition to the next season.
And so you'll see this on your, on astrology cafe. It's like the most basic fucking thing. So you'll see this and basically you'll be like, wow, when you see on your thing, you're like, I'm an Aquarius. It's a fixed sign. So the way that when she just went through the orders, Dani did, she, it's actually really crazy because all 12 of the signs follow all 12 of our, you know, like our lunar year, essentially. Not lunar, but our solar year.
Yes.
So like what you're going to go and say is basically like, Aries is a cardinal sign. It's the first in the astrological makeup. It's also the first of spring.
In the Northern Hemisphere.
In the Northern Hemisphere. Right. That's right. Southern's different. So I'll let you take it off there.
So Aries opens spring. So Aries is cardinal, right? Then Taurus is fixed, right? And then Gemini is mutable.
And explain what cardinal, I love this too. Cardinal is, fixed is, as well as mutable.
So cardinal starts. Cardinal is known as the most kind of controlling, right? And then fixed is the most stubborn.
I have a lot of fixed. And then
mutable is the most shifty,
right? So adaptable.
Adaptable, like, yes. So the positive side is, I'll go to the positive, is that cardinal starts, they take initiation.
Like an Aries, it's a quick manifester, we're saying.
Yeah. Exactly, right? Fixed is going to follow things through. Mm-hmm. Or see things through. Yeah. And then mutable is going to have an adaptability.
And a finish.
And, exactly. So, okay, so Aries is cardinal. Taurus is fixed. Gemini is mutable. Should I do it this way? Aries is cardinal fire.
Ah, totally. There we go. Now we'll have that in full.
So Aries is cardinal fire, right? Taurus is fixed earth. Gemini is mutable air. Cancer is cardinal water. Leo is fixed fire. Virgo is mutable earth. Libra is cardinal air. So it starts fall, right? Scorpio is fixed water. Sagittarius is mutable fire. Capricorn is cardinal earth. So it starts winter, right? Aquarius is fixed air. And then Pisces is mutable water.
Excellent.
No. And I missed, Cancer started summer.
Cardinal. So back to now this question, what if somebody has opposing elements in their chart? And I said Aries, which is the fire cardinal.
Right.
And Cancer, which is the water cardinal.
Yes.
So there we go. I'll let you take it from there.
So both of those signs are going to be controlling.
Yeah.
Both of them are going to be initiators. It's just that fire initiates through its gut and instinct, and it's gonna take action, whereas Cancer is gonna control emotionally. Mm-hmm. So there's gonna be some friction, right, within that. But both of those denote wanting to be in charge.
Excellent.
Right. So Cancer is kind of like the matriarch.
Totally.
And Aries is like the cowboy.
Yeah. I love that. So essentially, like the biggest thing they can take from a manifestation standpoint, if they have kind of these opposing, which not, I don't feel like no signs are really too opposing.
Yeah.
They all like can work together in different ways. Mm-hmm. It's basically, I think, just tuning into what the elements are, what the aspects are, and looking in particular to that planet or that house and what those things represent. That's going to give you a little innuendo of what might be unconscious and needs to become conscious and authentic.
Exactly.
So none of it's bad.
No.
It's all good.
There's no bad.
Yeah, there really is no bad in life.
No.
No such thing.
No.
It's all just
It's all material.
No, I'm kidding. Does this work? All right, cool. What if you have a chart where you're all fire, earth, air, or water? Like if you're just, I have seven planets in Scorpio.
Wow.
Yeah, what if that's
I think like Demi Moore has something like that.
Oh my gosh, my breathwork teacher, she's like, I have 12, I have nine planets in Scorpio. And I was like, wow. How do you get out of the house? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's so intense. A lot of sex.
Yeah, a lot of sex. You just do a lot of sex.
Or just like a lot of celibacy. Like,
yeah. Totally. I love it.
Honestly, seek people out who balance you. So, for example, if you have a ton of Pisces in your chart, seek out a Virgo or go to Virgo qualities.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Right? So, and don't, so try not to turn that into a shadow. Mm-hmm. The opposition, try to look at it with an open mind and what you can learn from.
Totally.
So that's my, go to the opposite.
And the best thing I can say from a manifestation standpoint and why astrology and I think manifesting, like everything in life are so connected and overlap is the quickest way to find magnetism is the opposite is always the medicine. Just like Ayurveda, the thing to heal this is the complete opposite thing.
Whether the antidote.
Exactly. So I think that's a great takeaway. And now we're going to rip through a couple more of these so we don't lose all the time. But I then we'll just have to have you back again because this is so fun. I don't know. Some of you guys might be like, you guys, shut up. It's just so much stuff. Okay. How can one recover from a bad astro reading? This is a really good one. A bad astro reading, choosing the wrong reader. And is there such a thing since it's just information and not fate? For example, I had a session with a trendy Twitter astrologer. I love that. Who told me that it was odd I was a writer, even though I have a chart for it. Oh, I hate this stuff. This makes me so
it
mad
makes
when this happens.
So I know 70%. Well, I think it's astrological trauma.
It is. It's totally astrological trauma. So I'll let you just take that.
I honestly feel like 75% of my first time clients
are totally whiplashed. Yeah.
Whiplashed. If it sounds negative, take it with a major grain of salt.
This is like the snake oil people that are like, your fortune is, or this is bad. Or it's, this is why I say, please don't see psychics. Don't see, unless it's somebody you've known in your family who's 100% right, don't go. They're going to plant limiting beliefs or do this. They're going to make you feel trauma.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Totally.
Right? So, I mean, I have this recently. Someone said to me, oh, I went to an astrologer and they said that my boyfriend has Venus in Gemini. He's going to cheat on me.
Oh my
really?
God.
Because I'm like, Venus in Gemini means he wants a woman who he finds interesting.
And like from all
and chatty,
sides,
yes.
Right? Chat, like wants to know all the elements of this one. Yeah, that's so
and curious. Yeah. So, you know, if it's negative, if it makes you feel, so there's a difference between getting feedback of like,
hey, you need to work on this.
Yes. Or you're holding yourself back. But if it feels fated.
That's the thing. If it's like your future is this,
yeah.
There's always free will. You can change your whole destiny in literally 1 minute that you decide to jump off of a cliff.
Yes. Then it's danger zone.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for one quick second of like the best tools are nothing's permanent at all. Mm-hmm. Literally you can wake up today and go do something different and your whole will and future changes, period. That's number one.
You can transcend circumstances.
Always. Like I'm the believer of manifestation. You can transcend anything that was predestined for you on this lifetime, which I don't even believe in that in the first place.
I did my Instagram story this morning was, so Mars is currently in retrograde and it will still be in retrograde when this airs.
Yeah.
We're shooting it just slightly before it airs. I met my boyfriend during Venus retrograde.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. I prosper the most always during Saturn and during Mercury in retrograde.
Yeah.
Always.
I think that me too. I have magic happen and I don't have Mercury retrograde natally in my chart. A third of people have Mercury retrograde in their chart because it happens
when they're born.
Year,
yeah. Right? Well, also it was just where they were when they were born.
Yes,
right? Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, this idea that like, I'm going to use transits to scare the shit out of myself.
Oh my God.
Or like, no.
Yeah.
What I always say is there may be an opportunity for healing or growth.
Yeah. Like anything in life.
Yes.
And the other last note on it too, that I wanted to say as well is if something doesn't intuitively feel correct, and this doesn't mean that you're just wanting to hide your head in the sand, but if you're listening to something and it doesn't sound intuitively correct, just shut it down. Not meaning like, I'm going to leave the session unless you're like an Aries, go for it. That's awesome. Do that if you can, but also be like, wah, 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 and just don't take it with you. And if something was implanted, do the daily reprogramming exercise to get rid of it, or literally no, like you can change anything in a minute. Nothing's predestined. It's all just, it's like sensationalism. Just turn it off. It's all bullshit. I was just in Hawaii. They've been like blowing up this volcano and yada, yada, yada. And it's not even present. Like it's crazy. So the sensationalism of anything is never...
It's never helpful.
Never helpful.
Outrage. We live in a culture of outrage.
We love it.
Right? Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is like, if you feel like they're telling that to you because they source their income from scaring you into needing them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like creating a codependent relationship of having to come back or let's work together again. I mean, my biggest thing when I worked with people was like, cool, won't see you in 4 months or don't even come back. Here's some tools.
People are always like, how do people work with you? I was like, I leave it up to individuals. So there are some clients that are going through a transformation and because of my master's in spiritual psychology, I help them through that. Mm-hmm. But that's on their own volition. They cannot sign up at any time. I tell them, they're doing great. Like this is not, I don't want to foster a dependence.
Yeah.
Not mostly because I believe that we all have the tools within ourselves. Some people, we just need mirrors or we just need people to help us reflect or we need insights. But yes, anything that feels like you need me to get better,
ever. It's all ever. In here. Yeah, I agree. And we'll ask a couple more and then I'm going to ask you some things. Where in your astro chart do you see your life lessons and your purpose, which we touched on a tiny bit?
Yeah. So I would say Saturn, because Saturn are lessons, and then the North Node and South Node.
And if they're doing your workshop and they're tuning in right now and seeing what's in their Saturn, what would be a good way to take that information that they notice in it through your workshop?
So it's interesting. So the first chakra, so the first three chakras are the ones that we're most challenged with because most of us, especially in our society, it's like Ayurveda, we're Vata heavy, right? So we're Neka.
Or two Pitta too.
Right. Yeah. So, which is here, right? So we're above, above our heart, right?
And we're not listening to our bodies. We're not listening to our intuition. We're like just whatever information we've taken that we should, or programming that we should be doing.
Right. Yeah. So our first chakra, which is our roots, right? And it's our tribal mentality. That's where the most meat is.
So
when they do the workshop, there's going to be the most in that area.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what has to be worked through. And then the sacral chakra, which is the second chakra, which is the navel, that has to do with how we share resources, right? And how we love, how we give and receive love and abundance, right? And flow our fertility, our creativity, all of that. And then the third chakra is the solar plexus. It's
which
the power point.
The
it's
most,
where we enmesh.
It's the most powerful in terms of manifestation work.
100%. When I was clearing it, not to be grotesque, but I vomited.
Yeah, I remember you were telling me about your different clearings. Yeah.
It's really intense. So, you know, the first three.
Excellent. And yeah, that's what we're least tapped into.
Yes.
So this will be like, let's say somebody's looking at their Saturn and it's, let's pick a sign we haven't even talked about because I feel like some haven't gotten some love at all.
I know.
Geez, what would that be?
Leo.
Oh, Leo got a love, some love at first. What about...
Sag? Did we talk about Sag yet?
We did it. Let's do Sag. I love Sag. Yeah. Okay. So Sag is in their Saturn, let's say. How would they look
at
that?
What do you mean? You mean they have Saturn in Sagittarius. And they just had their Saturn return.
Yes. And so exactly. And so like, let's say they've like read about what that means on Cafe Astrology, which probably isn't the best resource, but it does tell you. And then they want to go, okay, I want to take this, the lessons that are in this planet for me through this workshop. How would they kind of like target that a little
bit? So Sagittarius in its shadow is super boastful and preachy and like on its high, right? Saturn's going to ground that.
Okay.
Saturn's going to say, it's like why we started to see all of this Me Too movement, because all of these men felt inflated by their power and felt they could get away with anything, right? So that coupled with Jupiter moving into Scorpio, it was like, no. So we're going to, you know, it was knocking people off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the lesson there, right?
So basically, it's like if you're looking at your Saturn, whatever sign you are, seeing what the shadow side of it is, it's shadow, and then taking that through the workshop.
Exactly.
Sounds like where some really deep work can happen.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. That's where you can see maybe the lessons that have been cut out for you, and it might be cut out for you.
Yes.
Seeing what that unconscious that needs to be conscious, and taking that through each of the chakras of your workshop. That's awesome.
Right. And that's going to be more structural. And then the South Node and the North Node.
Ah, okay, great.
What I have to grow into, what feels uncomfortable.
Okay, especially the North Node, it sounds like. Taking that through. Oh, okay, I love this. I can't wait to do this workshop. I'm so excited. Okay, cool. What do you recommend for manifesting or setting intentions during a new moon? Because Danny used to co-facilitate new moon ceremonies in circles.
Yes.
So I love that we're asking you this. And what do you suggest for new moon rituals, if you have any?
So new moon rituals, it's the sky is dark, right? So it's a time to go internal and really ask the questions and write down your manifestations. Now, I think it's really dangerous to add a religiosity to it and to think if you don't write your manifestations on the new moon, they're not going to happen.
Yeah, no.
I also think it can get dangerous to do it so often that you're in a state of lack.
Control.
Yes. Because it's like, if I do it every single week, if I month, if I write down every single new moon, it's going to happen.
I say manifestation OCD.
Yes.
It's actually pushing things away.
Yes. Instead of writing it out, letting it go, and receiving it, right? So I think the new moon is actually a really powerful time to reset and set intentions underneath.
I agree.
How do you want to feel? What are the qualities that you want to ground in? So let's say you want to ground in creative flow. You want to ground in loving kindness. You want to ground in openness, because we've talked about this. There's a grabby culture around manifestation.
Totally.
Right? I don't think I've ever used the word grabby, but that's just what's right. And I think, you know, the irony is that manifestation most happens when we
least resistant. And we're empowered. We're in our worth. And we don't have anything that we're trying to control. It's just like, we know we deserve it. We've done it all. Now it can flow through. I agree.
And so there's something that I was taught by my teachers, which is, you know, when you're writing down a manifestation, this or something better for the highest good of all involved. That I learned directly at my master's in spiritual psychology from USM. And that was one of the greatest takeaways, because what it taught me was, just because I have a manifestation, if other people are involved, it's what's for the highest good of everyone involved.
Totally.
So we get into this a lot. I think you see this a lot, where someone's like, they want to manifest a specific person, not a partner.
I know.
They want to manifest Johnny down the street to love them.
Yeah.
It doesn't work because who's to say that it's actually very self-absorbed, not selfish, but self-absorbed.
Yeah.
Right. Because how do you know Johnny?
Also deeply in lack, not understanding.
Right. Obviously. Yes. That too. So it's like, it's not taking into account that everybody has their own journey. So a lot of times, let's say with conception, it's like that soul has an agenda.
Totally. Boy, have I figured that out. Yeah.
Right. So it's like, you know, I was single for a very long time, And then it's like, I now realize, we came together at the perfect time.
Always.
And a moment earlier, and I wouldn't have been ready, and he wouldn't have been ready.
1,000%. And if we take like all skin off of it, the physical plane, any of that, like humans, all energy, it's just you guys are here to teach each other lessons. You're uniting with anything in your life for you to grow, for that to grow.
That's 100%.
All it is. It's like nothing more.
No. And it's the communication and the willingness to grow.
Totally. And the openness. And there's a lot to be said too of being open to grow is a very magnetic thing, because you're facing your fears and you're creating magnetism.
You have to be willing to move outside of your comfort
always.
Zone. That's Aries are great at that, whereas fixed signs are more challenged in that area. So you have to be willing to be outside of your comfort zone.
And I feel like I just say this, like Max is very mutable. Right. He has a lot of mutability in his chart.
Yes.
He's like the double Virgo Sag, and he's got it all going on. That also when you can hang out with, you know, very like cardinally, like Aries and stuff like that, all of his business partners have all been Aries. Like things can just, taking their momentum because you're mutable. You can go with the flow.
100%.
I think that's great. And last two questions. How should manifesting change, or should it change when Mercury's in retrograde? I feel like we covered that though. Do you want to just say a few more notes on that? Based on individual charts?
It's just Mercury in retrograde means it's a time to review. So the thing is just rethink what it is that you're so attached to
and
getting.
And slow down.
And slow down. Yeah. And just be open to the unexpected. Mercury retrograde is when I have the most magical run-ins and experiences.
Same. Blast from the past.
Yes.
Like, so abundant. Beautiful things work out for me.
Yeah.
And I had to learn that intuitively because I had so much programming that it's a bad thing. It's like, this is... I always get stoked when it happens. The first 2 weeks, like, the pre-phase and the post-phase always fuck with me a little bit. But during is like, Matt, and whereas poor Max, like the double bird, his like computer's brain, I mean, everything falls apart. But he's also not in his full conscious authenticity in any way, shape, or form. So he's like, the universe is like,
totally,
like sending things at it. And I'm just like floating or whatever. Let's finish on this note and hit it strong, since it is the so much of the planet of manifestation. Explain how what your Venus means in terms of attracting a partner, also manifestation in general. And we'll
yes. So Venus is how we attract, period.
Yeah.
So tuning into the energy of your Venus is going to help you attract, period.
Mm-hmm.
It's also your values, what you like. It's what you want, but not what you need.
Mm.
So when manifesting a partner, you'll use your Venus to attract unconsciously.
Yeah.
Right? So I have Venus in Leo. I get a little haughty.
Yeah.
I also get very generous. Like my boyfriend gets gifts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Max is a Leo. I love a Leo Venus.
It's right. So
I'm like selfish Aries Venus. This is stuff I'm trying to work through. Like, what's his love
language?
If
you have Venus in Pisces, you're going to be very feminine, right? In that way, you're probably going to wear a lot of flowy dresses.
Mm-hmm.
If you have Venus in Capricorn, you're going to attract by being a serious partner, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you're serious and you're grown up and you're adult.
You're here to do the work, you're all that.
Right. In a man's chart, it's usually, in a heterosexual man's chart, it's usually the kind of woman that he likes.
Mm-hmm.
But the moon is the kind of woman he needs, right? So in a woman's chart, your moon are your needs. You may be attracted to something Venus-like, but make sure that your moon is being satiated.
So what are a couple of like key things they can really look at that part of their chart right now and take away? So the unconscious of Venus, which is the shadow, it's the opposite. It's what, if they're looking at the unconscious and they're taking that through your workshop and how that working through the chakras.
So looking at Saturn.
Okay.
Looking at if you have a lot of energy concentrated in one area or one sign, go to the opposite sign.
Okay, cool. Because that's the shadow always.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Looking at the seventh house.
Mm-hmm.
Also the shadow,
because
we project it. And then the moon.
Okay.
And the fourth house.
Yeah.
So just a few things.
And then, just take all of that through the work, and you can take all that through repairing a shadow. And then like focusing back, honing in on working with their Venus. Let's say their Venus is Pisces and it's more feminine, fun, ethereal, but they've been raised like sexuality means that you have to be like androgynous and hard and yada, yada. That would be the unconscious that needs, that ego shell needs to be cracked down. What's some work, what can they like work with if they're just honing in from this video alone, just looking at their Venus and in terms of manifestation, what are a few like key tips you can give them?
Well, it depends on the sign, right? But it's playing more into that sign's energy.
Okay. Leaning in.
So if you have Venus in Scorpio, don't be afraid to be powerful and strong.
Yeah. And sexual.
Right.
Yeah, fine. It nurtures you. If you were repressed sexually and you were raised super Catholic and this is really bad and taboo, that's the unconscious potentially.
Exactly.
Like looking at that.
Exactly. If you have Venus in Capricorn, don't be afraid to be serious.
And bossy. Yeah, that's who you are.
Yeah. If you have Venus in Aquarius, dare to be different. That's how
you
attract.
If you are looking at anybody else who has a Venus in Aquarius, especially if you're a heterosexual couple and it's a male, run. No, I'm kidding.
Wait, did we talk about this? Every single person prior to my boyfriend had Venus in Aquarius.
It's the most unavailable sign.
Every single one. And finally, when I met him, it's like, honestly, it took me a week or something to ask him what his birthday was. And then he had Venus in Capricorn. And
you're
I was
like, thank you.
Oh my God, Venus in Aquarius.
Like, you better
red flag,
or Gemini or something that can handle that.
Yes.
Or Leo.
Or you just, you're all Aquarius and you just want space. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, just so you know.
So good.
If you have
Venus in Aquarius, then, you know, play up your unique self.
Yeah.
Fly your freak flag.
And know that you need space.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you have Venus in Taurus, lean into your sensuality. Don't like, be afraid of that.
Like the fun and the sexy and the things that just make you love.
But also stuff. Like, it's okay to love food. It's okay to have a body that is more voluptuous.
Totally.
It's okay. If you have Venus in Cancer, you're going to nurture by, you're going to cook him a meal.
Yeah. Or right? her.
Or her.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. You're going to cook your partner a meal or take care of them in some way, right? If you have Venus in Virgo, that's the sign of the maiden. Mm-hmm. So you may actually like solitude, but you're going to attract by serving.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Have we hit everything? If you have Venus in Sagittarius, you're going to attract by being an explorer, a traveler, a philosopher.
Yeah. Free spirit.
Yeah.
Have we hit them all? I hope so. I feel like I know we get that sometimes.
Gemini.
Yes.
If you have Venus in Gemini, you're attracted by being curious.
Yes. Okay.
And interesting. And interested.
Now, please tell us more about your course before we go, because I do know it's going to be so helpful for anyone who hasn't gotten to experience Dani, or of course, get a session if you haven't. It is the luckiest thing on the planet. But I want to hear, because I can't wait to take your course.
So crafting a workshop around astrology can be more challenging. And I'm equally as well-versed in the chakra system. Yeah. And I use that a lot, actually, in my counseling sessions. And the chakras they're more universal. It's good because there's seven chakras, there's going to be one for each day, mm-hmm. right? And we're going to dive in and look at how, so the chakras are the energy centers, right? From the root to the crown, mm-hmm. right? And we're going to look at the ways in which our unconscious is ruling our lives and showing up as fate.
Which is 70% of all of our chakras, I
right?
feel. If not 90. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, the big ones are 1, 2, 3, and then 5, because 5 is not only, which is your throat chakra, is not only about speaking your truth, mm-hmm. which is about setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. It's also about surrendering your will to God's will.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And that's a big part of manifestation,
totally.
Right? It's like, it's getting out of your own way.
Oh yeah.
But we will explore each of them. And so there's going to be a lot of journal prompts. There's going to be an explanation, mm-hmm. a deep explanation, journal prompts, and then a listening meditation piece.
Awesome. I love it. So it'll be so much like the work you guys have done already that you're familiar
with. Yes. And it scaffolds it. And it's really about digging in, because there's that famous Jung quote, which is, I'm paraphrasing, but until the unconscious becomes conscious, it shows up as fate.
Yeah.
So it's liberating ourselves so we can experience our destiny.
So it's basically going from sleepwalking through life and having mm-hmm. things happen to you to taking your power and actually attracting the things you want.
Exactly.
Essentially.
Exactly. And a lot of that work is in the first three.
Oh, I love it. So, I know those are the ones I'm always having to work through. Always.
And it's also... It's just like your work. It's not a destination. It's like you revisit and and revisit. And so, you know, it's just really developing an awareness and a conversation and a dialogue within ourselves about
Excellent.
It.
Ooh, I love it. Thank you so much for being
here. Thank you for having
me. We'll have to do another. I mean, I know you guys are going to have way more questions after this one.
So. Like, you guys created more questions than answers.
Yeah.
I'm really confused.
Have a good day, guys.